Okay, so actually the purpose of this talk was to, last week actually I talked at on the blackboard, but the purpose is to visualize more the galaxy, dust evolution in galaxy. And it's a good timing because my PhD student, Guangzhou and Shohei, and in collaboration with Ken Nagamine's group in Osaka University, who is a specialist of SPH simulation in cosmological context, and his postdoc, Shohei Aoyama, and Guangzhou implementing dust in the SPH simulation using gadget. So it's a good timing to show more, visualize more the dust evolution in galaxies. So I talk about their efforts on, mainly their efforts on implementing dust evolution in the real simulation in galaxies. So I briefly introduce current, the talk is quite simple, just what is the problem and how we did it, or, and yeah, future prospects or something like that. So current, what is the current problem? So briefly, I just talk briefly. But before that, maybe most of you know, but dust is a so small solid particle in the interstellar medium. And size is around this size from some observation, extinction curve or something. There is some constraint on the size or species. And dust is important, especially in the context of galaxy evolution. We are especially interested in a galaxy evolution in this particular work. And an important aspect, dust is indeed an important aspect of galaxy evolution through mainly the obscuration of the starlight. So the extinction, starlight is absorbed by dust and re-emit in the infrared. So indeed, so there are some images. This is maybe galactic molecular clouds. Maybe. So where there is a lot of dust, the background light is absorbed, and we see, visually we see this. And in extragalactic objects, also dust plays a role in blocking some lights, background light in this galaxy. And but in far infrared, if you go to far infrared, you see dust emission itself rather than the absorption. So this means that stellar light is absorbed by dust but reprocessed it into the far infrared. So this means that the SED from UV to far infrared submillimeter is changed by dust. So in this sense, dust shapes the spectral energy distribution of galaxies. And also practically, many observers are interested in getting correct star formation rate because star formation activity is really the basic component of that drives galaxy evolution. So, but observationally, it's not a trivial task to get star formation, especially dust absorbs stellar light. So understanding of how much light is absorbed by dust gives us a way to correctly estimate the star formation rate in galaxies.
Sorry, the actual number of the energy re-emitted by dust in the infrared compared to the volumetric luminosity is 50% or?
Around 50%, roughly speaking. Yeah.
So the remaining 50% is from lines from the ISM?
I mean, 50% of the star formation, stellar light is absorbed by dust and yes, re-emitted in the
infrared.
Yeah.
So the remaining 50% emitted by the, where does it go?
The remaining light just escape from galaxy.
Directly,
I think, yeah.
So there must be also a part that goes into the gaseous part.
Yeah. But this part is actually minor part. Maybe 10, at most 10% or something. You mean the Lyman limit or, yeah.
But because in Lyman alpha is
yeah, quite
away.
Bright.
These are numbers that I usually think that the Lyman alpha is 50%.
I think it's 10 micron. It depends on metallicity and IMF.
I'm talking about
In an extreme, yeah.
Oh, but for solar metallicity, it's about 10%, I think.
So 30% escapes directly, 10% it goes into lemon alpha,
right.
And 50% it does.
But the stellar continuum, how does this, photosphere radiation, between the Lyman break and like 4,000 angstrom. So UV continuum emission is dominated, I think, in the young galaxies. I mean, rather than the, photons absorbed by hydrogen, the stellar light between the 900 angstrom and 4,000 angstrom or something, so-called UV continuum is the most dominant.
Yeah, but sorry, maybe this is irrelevant, but as
it's okay.
But there's something comes to my mind now, that light, the UV light that is eating the dust, okay?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
It's partly re-emitting the infrared, but partly goes into eating of the ISM. Right.
That's right, through so photoelectric heating.
All the light that has been absorbed by dust goes into thermal emission because some part must go into heating the ISM.
But heating of the ISM is through the photoelectric heating.
Correct.
So, but the conversion from the photon energy to electron energy is not so large, if I remember correctly.
Well, most of it must be 1 eV because the energy density of the ISM is 1 eV, but also the infrared is even less. I don't know, maybe it's something that
we need to. If I remember correctly, most of the light absorbed by dust goes to infrared, not by heating. Small part goes to heating, maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so another thing is that dust is also a site of, dust surface is a site of H2 formation. So to understand the H2 abundance, which is related to star formation activity from some talks in this meeting, some of the morning meetings is related to this topic. So understanding dust, H2 formation dust is also important. So in summary, dust, understanding dust is quite critical to understand some major aspects of galaxy evolution. And the current problem, in short, there are a lot of problems actually, but specifically for this talk, actually current problem, although there are a lot of dust evolution models. Rafaela is also working on some dust evolution model, and I myself is also working since many years. Still, it's quite difficult to understand how dust is distributed in a galaxy, or dust, predicting dust properties, especially grain size distribution, is still difficult. So indeed, grain size distribution changes the optical properties of dust. So extinction curve, wavelength dependence of dust extinction is strongly dependent on grain size distribution. And also, grain surface chemistry, so for example, H2 formation, occurs on the surface. And the surface, with a fixed amount of dust, surface is regulated by the grain size distribution. So surface is different if there are a lot of small grains or a lot of large grains. So grain surface chemistry is also depends on the grain size distribution. And spatial distribution is also important because the radiative transfer effect depends on the geometry, as we discussed for some time in the morning sessions. And so spatial distribution prediction on spatial distribution is also important to correctly estimate how dust absorbs the stellar light, so that so-called radiative transfer effect. And so this is important, that's important for the correction of dust extinction and predicting fine infrared SED of galaxies. So our topic is related to those, more understanding of those two things. So the goal is first goal is to implement all relevant processes driving dust evolution in a galaxy evolution simulation. So because the simulation gives us some idea about spatial distribution of gas or stars, and including these some processes I will explain. By doing this, we can predict spatial distribution of dust. Okay, this is the same thing. Understand the spatial distribution, and also we also treat some information on grain size distribution in the simulation. Although it's time consuming, we still tried. So we also explain. I also explain this. And the current technical problem is that in short, simulation is time consuming. So full grain size distribution, which means that we have to, ideally we have to treat the information on the grain size. So with some numbers, sufficient numbers for the grain size direction. So simulation is already three dimensional. Plus, if we add grain size information, it becomes practically four-dimensional simulation, which is computationally very, very heavy. So no one has done this kind of calculation with grain size distribution. So maybe for the first step, it's quite strategically, it's quite useful to start with simple things. And we just assume that the grains are, populations are divided into small grains and large grains. So simply, we call it two-size approximation. And so the concept is that simply divide the grain population into small and large populations around this size. But this size comes from the more detailed calculation by Asano et al. Who works on the one-zone calculation, but solving full grain size evolution of full grain size distribution. So around this radius, some processes like grain growth by accretion or other processes have prominent effect. For example, accretion has a prominent effect below this, or coagulation affects the size above this or something like that. Then, considering this kind of processes, we empirically put this size as a dividing size between small and large grains. This is just rough, but for simplicity. And then the equation becomes computationally light and which is suitable for already heavy galaxy simulations. So we just put two equations, so evolution of small grains and evolution of large grains, and see which grains are dominated. So we still keep grain size information.
This two-size approximation is always valid, right? Whatever is the size distribution, you can also use for higher redshift.
It's general. It's general.
The conduit, it's not only time consuming to have a grain size distribution. Mm-hmm. If you have an AMR code, mm-hmm. at the detection, it's not a trivial problem.
Mm-hmm. It's right.
Or SPH probably.
That's right. Yeah. So specifically, so we try to implement this in SPH, but in the mesh treatment, it's maybe different. Concept should be same, but technically, maybe different. Okay.
The initial condition you give to the just according to MRN or something.
Actually, in this calculation. We didn't assume any initial conditions. We start with zero for both small and large grains. And the assumption is that
no dust.
In the simulation. Ah, okay. In the simulation. But we these two species separately from initial condition. Okay. So to simulate dust evolution, we have to treat the life cycle of dust in a galaxy, which I already talked about at on the blackboard. But briefly, so the dust starting point. Anyway, this is cycle, so there is no starting point. But anyway, for convenience, for convenience, we just start with stars, and stars produce dust at the end of their lives, like supernovae, expansion of supernovae, so the temperature drops or something, and or the stellar wind, especially AGB star originating from Roma stars. And the wind is expanding. So at a certain point, temperature drops down to 1,000 K so that the dust can condense or something like that. So then dust is produced by those sources, then injected into the interstellar medium. But in the interstellar medium, actually, there are some lot of processes, like dust destruction by supernova shock through sputtering, or the interstellar gas is, diffuse interstellar gas is high, turbulent. So turbulent velocity is like 10 kilometers per second. Then if the grains can grains collide with each other, then the grains with 10 kilometers per second, then they can be disrupted. This is called shattering, so into small pieces. And also, if they are included in dense clouds, like molecular clouds, they can grow, because the typical velocity becomes lower than the binding energy of dust composing materials. So the dust can grow, basically, in dense medium. For example, dust can, I forgot to write, but dust can accrete the surrounding metals, so dust, gas phase metals, so that the dust can grow larger. And so dust can collide with each other and stick with each other. This is called coagulation and become larger and larger. So dust can grow in the dense medium. And they start form stars, and so these processes should be considered in a simulation. So there are already 5 or 6 processes already. And actually, this is not my picture. My student put quite beautiful pictures about each processes. And okay, so as I said, so dust condensation, starting point is so dust condensation in stellar ejecta, and yeah, dust is, yeah, this is AGB star, and in the stellar wind, gas phase metals condense into dust. And in the supernova, in the adiabatic expansion phase, some of the gas particles can be converted to condense into dust. And also, in the interstellar medium, in star formation, dust just disappears because they are involved into stars with gas. So this is called astration, and in the star formation, some part of dust in pre-existing in the interstellar medium just disappear into stars, locked into stars. And also, in the dense medium, as I said, dust grows occur. So that coagulation is a grain sticking to become, maybe it doesn't become spherical, but anyway, for the convenience of theoretical treatment, we assume that it becomes larger and gives a spherical form.
So, you know, the grains, are you considering grain charge, or
no.
These are all neutral?
All neutral, yeah. Because the assumption is that
this coagulation could be.
Could be, but actually, I once estimated grain potential, and since the this velocity induced by turbulence is quite large, like 0.1 kilometer per second or something like that, then they can stick. They overcome the
Coulomb barrier
in the simple. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
It depends heavily on, of course, on the size and the local temperature. If you're in a regime when the charge scales minimum with the size, which usually is the case when you go beyond the micron, then all variance is squared, so A squared.
Yeah. Okay.
And with the turbulence, you should keep in mind that they're strongly coupled to the gas, frictionally coupled. So the relative velocity cannot be that high. It depends on the size.
Okay.
And then, even if it comes over the barrier, then there is another problem. When it comes over the barrier, they keep at high velocity and then shatter.
We just simply use the classical grain charge calculated by under galactic interstellar radiation field or something. We need to reconsider it. Especially we are talking about various stages of galaxy evolution. So, simply speaking, we neglect the grain charge.
Okay.
And accretion also, of course, depends on the grain charge, and also we neglected just collision rate between expected from the sun.
Yeah, less of a problem because you're accreting atoms at that neutral.
Right? It's assumed to be neutral.
For the carbonation, the two grains, which are at the same charge, then maybe a problem, but even if you're at a low velocity.
Well, even with accretion, we should keep in mind the charge, because if the charge is negative, then it enhances. No, it enhances the accretion of ions.
Okay.
If you have ions, gas is neutral around you.
Well, it's a good question. Depending where you are in dense region, unless it's too dense, the ionization fraction can be fairly high. So
accretion occurs mostly in molecular domain.
Ionization fraction can be fairly high, so you and since accretion is enhanced by attraction, then it can be significant.
I understand that, but anyway, we can talk later.
Basically, we just assume the collision rate between these species gives the growth rate for coagulation and accretion, and we just include this velocity as a kind of parameter, it's coming from another calculation by Yen et al. Which I talked about before. But anyway, we just put some velocity and collision rate. And in the diffuse medium, same thing. So high velocity, in the diffuse medium, we have a typically high velocity, like 10 kilometers per second. So the grain-grain collision induce this kind of fragmentation. Or supernova destruction is predominantly occurring. Of course, it also occurs in the dense medium. The diffuse medium is also more efficient to be swept. So the shock wave can sweep the dust grain, and part of the dust grain is destroyed into the gas phase and return into the gas phase. So these are processes considered, and so we just simplify the explanation of simulation. I just say that we use a particle-based simulation method, smooth particle hydrodynamic simulation using Gadget 3. So we include gas particle collisional gas particle, but approximated by particles, and also dark matter and star formation occurs, so stellar particles are also.
Sorry, I ask something?
Yeah.
So you have added another species of particles which represent the gas, dust is
free coupled with the gas? Free coupled with gas, yeah. Actually, Becky treated the dust particles separately, but yes, for the starting point. We start with isolated spiral galaxy for the first step. We just simulate a single spiral galaxy, typical galaxy. But in the future, of course, we can implement the same thing in a cosmological simulation to predict more statistical features. So the simulation looks like this. So Yashohei calculated, ran some calculations already, and this is a gas distribution, and which look at 1 giga-year, maybe, snapshot. So we actually spiral galaxy is formed, and the stellar distribution is like this. So we use this simulation. And the dust model is like this, in equation. So we included those five or six processes. But the other treatment is like this. So we treat, as I said, this is based on a two-size approximation. So large grain and small grain. And we trace the dust-to-gas ratio in each SPH particle. So each concept is that in each SPH particle, we solve the dust evolution. So this is large grain dust-to-gas ratio and small grain dust-to-gas ratio. And at the time step t, from t to t plus delta t, we solve, so shuttering time scale is here. So shuttering is a sink for the large grain. Large grains collide with each other and produce small grains by shuttering. So shuttering is minus, and coagulation is plus because the small grain coagulate into large grain. So we include this by time scale, but estimation time scale is explained. I explain this later, and also this is a term for the condensation. Okay, maybe this is a kind of an
so.
So
the large grains do not agree.
Right, because the small grains have much larger surface, so we approximate that small grain accretion goes to the small grain, but after that coagulation.
Sure.
Occurs and.
Sorry, Nilo. Yeah. The minus delta V supernovae LS are destruction by supernova shocks.
Ah, this one. Yeah, this is supernova shocks. Yeah. I briefly explain it later. And first, this term is stellar yield term. So if we assume that some condensation efficiency calculated by some stellar condensation calculations, so we use another theoretical model that's specifically predicted the dust condensation in stellar ejecta. And this is a metal yield. So metal yield times condensation efficiency means the dust, newly formed dust production.
Sorry, what's the dependence on the density of the environment in these conditions?
Maybe I explain later, but briefly, these time scales are roughly inversely proportional to the density. So if the density is higher, those processes occur faster. And okay, so this is the supernova destruction. Basically, the concept is that we just estimate a sweeping, swept gas mass and destroy some fraction of dust here. So the concept is like this. Maybe I
excuse me. So in this dynamics, you don't consider the cross interaction between small and larger grains, like coagulation of smaller grains with larger.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. That's right. So
you don't.
Well, no. Okay. So the major part is the of shattering is, for example, collision between large grains.
So, for instance, this term on the first equation, the second one in the brackets, the small over tau coagulation. This is a coagulation.
This is coagulation.
This is coagulation.
Coagulation
of
is
grains, yeah?
Of smaller grains
because
into large grains.
You assume that surface is dominated by
small. By small grains. For coagulation, surface. But for honestly, for shattering, this is approximation. Shattering maybe. Small grain also collide with large grains and disrupt some part of large grain to produce many small grains.
I don't think coagulation of smaller grains by sweeping of smaller grains by larger grains.
That's right.
Always. Like if a big grain goes and it takes all smaller grains also motion. It's not included here.
No. So yeah, for coagulation maybe we can justify because the surface is dominated by small grains, but for shattering, anyway, this is simplification.
If your environment is non-equilibrium, I thought that the relative motion of small and larger grains can be significant.
Ah, okay.
And in this case, this is exactly the equilibration of smaller, or just sweeping smaller grains.
Okay, by that big grain. Okay. But this is not included.
Yes. Quick question. So the supernova destruction is fully covered with the supernova explosions you have in your galaxy when you form stars.
Yeah, form star and part of the stars become supernova or something by assuming initial mass function. So this is linked to the star formation activity in SPH simulation. And okay, shattering is included by the time scale shattering, and coagulation is included in this way. And this is accretion. Those time scales are ST. I hope, sorry, I precisely don't remember. Okay, maybe here, so more details, but I don't know, go much into the detail. But briefly, so shattering and coagulation time scales are based on collision time scale. But collision time scale depends on the density. So we use the local densities in the simulation. So simulation is, so we directly use the density of simulation to estimate the collision time scale. So inversely proportional density, basically. And, okay, yeah.
You take the average density and temperature of your stellar cloud.
Of the gas particle.
So you don't have any subgrid multi-phase description of the gas
particle. We need subgrid description. Actually, I should have organized some parts. But okay, and for accretion, accretion time scale is also based on collision time scale between grain and gas phase metal. So we calculate the metallicity, metal enrichment in SPH simulation. So we have information of gas phase metal abundance. And grain abundance is calculated directly by our method. So that collision time scale depends on the density and temperature of the gas. So we consider this dependence using the local information calculated by SPH.
Sorry, question about the accretion. So your accretion depends on the total metallicity you follow the gas species.
Just for the first step, we just consider total metallicity. We are not considering the silicate. We don't divide grain species. This is next step. Yeah. Actually, my student Guanzhou is working on separating these two, silicate and graphite, carbonaceous. Yeah. Okay, so shattering. For shattering, actually, this occurs in the diffuse medium. So the diffuse medium have largest can be resolved. So we don't need a subgrid modeling for shattering, but for coagulation and accretion, because I forgot to see the number, but this special resolution is like 80 parsec or 50 parsec in the most, maybe 50 parsec or something. But typical dense medium hosting the coagulation and accretion, which is typically, for example, molecular clouds or something.
So dense media, you mean what number?
It's big, but we assume the typical density of 10 to the third per cubic centimeter. Maybe practically it's molecular cloud.
10 to what?
10 to the three. Yeah.
But then, I mean, aren't these cells forming stars? They are so dense.
They are forming stars. So star formation is also solved by assuming star formation law.
Assume that threshold is forming stars.
Yeah, there is a threshold.
Which is 1 or something like this?
Maybe larger, but yeah, more or less.
So I'm asking, so if the dense media is 10 to the 3, and mm-hmm. you form stars at 1 particle cubic centimeter, where do you find such a dense media?
As
soon as you have a dense media, it turns into stars. Mm,
we don't assume the 100% star formation efficiency. So still, I forgot the stress threshold, but okay. There are two things. So there is a threshold for star formation, and we don't convert everything into stars immediately for the gas particles. So we still have dense medium. at any time step.
So a fraction of the gas particle contain, well, fraction,
yeah, fraction of gas particle
contains in the leftover gas.
Leftover gas still exists. So, and another thing is that we don't resolve, free resolve this kind of 10 to the third cubic centimeter dense gas. So we assume that we put, yeah. So resolution is not high enough to resolve each molecular cloud. So we assume that in a dense part, a certain fraction of gas is in molecular cloud. So dense means 10 per cubic centimeter, which is almost the same as the star formation threshold. And in those dense regions, we assume that half is in such a dense medium, and we fix the densities because we don't know that we don't have information below this above this density.
So you would use, because in Gadget there is a sub-grid ISM model so you don't use that sub-grid
no
model.
We just simply do, yeah, for the first day, maybe simple assumption may be better to be transparent. Okay, so for this, we still use analytical subgrid model by assuming some fraction of dense medium. And for supernova destruction, we still need subgrid model because we can't resolve each supernova remnant. But we know the supernova rate in each gas particle, so we can each stellar particle actually. So we know how many supernova occurs around a supernova remnant affects the surrounding gas. So we can estimate this gas is affected by how many supernova remnants, and we can estimate fixing the energy of supernova. We can estimate that volume that is swept by supernovae. So in this swept volume, we assume that 0.4, this is based on Nozawa et al.'s calculation, and 40% of dust is destroyed if they are once swept by supernova.
Do you mean if you get a shock front that is passing by your
particle? Yeah, a gas particle. So we estimate that. So we have a stellar particle. So we estimate how distant these supernova remnants can sweep the gas. And we, based on this radius, those gas particles surrounding this stellar particle is affected by dust destruction.
Not the shock from the supernova dust inside the hydrodynamic of the simulation.
It's not resolved actually. It's based on the each supernova remnant. So.
Yeah, but this is you said that you reach a density of around 10. Mm-hmm. So probably you have 10 to the mass resolution of 10 to the 5, 10 to the 4, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So each star particle corresponds to a star cluster of 10 to the 4,
yeah,
to the 5.
Yeah.
So you have 10 to the 2, yeah, 10 to the 3 supernovae. Mm-hmm. So you should be able to solve the.
Yeah, we are solving this. Yeah, we put some energy so that in those particles, but the number of particles surrounding this stellar particle is like several. So we basically what we are doing is just give some energy to those several particles, but each supernova, how many supernova affects this each. The effect of shock destruction of each supernova cannot be resolved. So we just give energy, but we at the same time we destroy some dust in those particles. We are treating in this way. Yeah.
But you consider the cumulative effect of all the supernovae that explode.
Yeah.
Okay. So because not all the supernova are equally efficient at destroying dust.
That's right. affected by the preceding supernovae.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you consider this is one sort of rule, and then you consider the total supernova rate that you have, and the maximum volume that can be shot, and then you 40% of the dust
is destroyed.
The gas particles affected within this volume is destroyed.
Destroyed. Yeah. Yeah, we assume that each the size of each supernova independently, independent of other supernovae. So, so just a cumulative, just simply, basically, yeah. We have some some estimation, but that, basically, yeah. See. Okay, so this is a result. Yes, yeah. There are maybe first you can see these two figures. And so we separated small grain and large grain. But because we assume that the large grain stars only produce large grains because of some previous theoretical calculations, we see that the first enrichment occurs for the large grain, and small grains follows because of the shattering of small large grains into small grains, and also growth. So first, large grain appears, and part of the large grain shattered into small grain. And small grain can accrete the surrounding material to grow. So accretion and shattering and accretion are important for small grains. And after that, formed small grain coagulate into large grain. So they interact with each other. And these are some diagrams. So this is a relation between dust to gas ratio and metallicity for SPH particles. So the distribution of SPH particles on this plane. So there is a nice relation between dust to gas ratio and metallicity, because the dust evolution is basically driven by metallicity, because metals condense into large grains. So, and yeah, roughly. But it's not linear, actually. Rafaela's comment yesterday is related to this. So the, in the low metallicity particles, dominant formation mechanism is stellar dust production. So it's linear. There is a linear relation with some condensation efficiency as a function of metallicity. But at a certain point, if the system is enriched with metals, actually the collision rate between metals and dust becomes high enough to induce accretion, dust growth by accretion, which has a non-linear effect on this dust to gas ratio. Colors are just a distribution of SPH particles. So most SPH particles distribute along this color, red region. So after that, the things are determined by the balance between accretion and supernova destruction. And this is a little more complicated thing. So we also took a ratio between small and large grains. And at low metallicity, small grains are formed by shattering. So it has a dependence on, linear dependence on, not linear, but maybe. But anyway, there is some rising dependence on, because as a dust is large grains are produced by stars. Shattering is also becomes more and more efficient to form small grains. And here we see accretion effect. Accretion effect drastically increases small grains, because small grains have larger surface area. And after that, coagulation takes place, because coagulation only occurs after the system is enriched with dust, because we need enough collision between small grains.
The accretion becomes important at metallicity.
Around here, between minus 1 and minus 0.5 in our parameter, in our setup. So this is for each galaxy, each particle, but maybe the same relation, of course, holds for if we put each galaxy along this. But anyway, what I am showing is the distribution of metallicity and dust-to-dust ratio in this galaxy. But physics is the same. Okay, so this is the same thing. So the first large grains are produced by stars, and gradually small grains are produced by shattering. But at a certain point, maybe around here, accretion becomes efficient enough to increase the small grain abundance drastically. And after that, at a certain point, coagulation transports small grain into large grains.
I missed this point.
Yeah.
Your galaxy starts with which metallicity?
Zero.
Is primordial.
Primordial, yeah, from zero metallicity. But we put some disk for the gas. So we start with zero metal disk, well-formed disk. So it's just our setup for isolating galaxies. Maybe in the future, we work on cosmological simulation with more natural initial conditions. Okay, so this is the same thing. So dust-to-gas ratio evolution is like this. So at first, stellar dust production is dominated. So it's linear, mostly linear. And at a certain point, accretion occurs and raises the dust-to-gas ratio quite drastically. But later, it becomes saturated because dust abundance cannot be larger than the metal abundance. So and this is so still some SPH particles are metal poor. So each SPH particle evolve in almost along this line, but in each time step. There is always a metal poor part in the galaxy. So still, we see this kind of metal poor particles.
So the slope there in the accretion dominated, in the growth, the accretion dominated part is like 1.5 or something.
This is almost one. So this is two order of magnitudes with one order, maybe two or something.
Do we have any observational point?
Maybe. Actually, Shohei actually plotted it. But the scatter is quite large. But we clearly see, talked yesterday, there is some Remy Ruiz's paper. There is some non-linear, not on this, I'm sorry. There is some effect of, we see this. Non-linearity. So for the metal-rich part, although the scatter is large, we can fit it with almost linear, and at lower metallicity, it goes down.
So this asymptotic slope one increase is seen in experiment as well?
Observations.
Yeah, so we do see this.
We do.
Emil Yar has made a compilation, which I think is covering the largest range of the metallicity that is currently available locally. And what they find is that they have a linear relation, which is covering the part in which accretion is saturated, which has been confirmed by even by other analyses, other surveys, and then below roughly. I would say, what was that? It was 0.1 or something around 0.1 solar. You have a huge dispersion of value. So you start to see a break, and then you have a huge dispersion, which seems to be consistent with.
So this basically transition to the to the stellar production.
Maybe this part, this transition also occurs. The metallicity level at which this occurs also depends on star formation time scale or something. So maybe there could be some dispersion caused by.
Is this asymptotic plus what? One scale?
Observationally supported. But still, the scatter or measurement error or some. We have some assumption in converting observed fine infrared SED to dust or something. So their observational scatter is quite still large, but overall it's linear trend is supported.
So what is the origin of this, metallicity squared dependence of the dust abundance?
I once tried to analytically derive this part, but it becomes exponential something, and so z to the square is not derived. Yeah, but still we can this should be nonlinear larger than one. We surely say that, and the physics it's related to the so collision between dust and metals. So in this sense, it's squared, square dependence on this one.
But
this is metallicity dependence, so it's not trivial.
Mm.
But we can at least say this should be nonlinear.
But you know, so yeah. Just to clarify this point, so when you compute, this must depend a lot on the radio time scale that was.
Our assumption is that growth occurs in gas with a density of 10^3, we assume that those clouds are located in a dense region in a simulation and threshold is like 10, maybe 10 per cubic centimeter. So if we find a SPH particle or a region of with such a high density, we assume that half is in such a dense medium.
Okay.
Yeah, so it depends.
So if you assume that instead you have a distribution of the properties, such as the one that was showing this morning, probably the regime is going to be even more scattered than what you find.
Yeah, but maybe if we assume the same distribution for any dense region, maybe scatter is not produced, I think. If we vary the distribution depending on the density, there should be scatter.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So yeah, this is more realistic, but anyway, for the first step, yeah, we just keep it simple. Okay, so so this is the evolution of grain size distribution, but we only assume small and large grains, it's just one information, it's a ratio. So by shattering, so small grains increase, and by accretion, this is actually nonlinear. So by accretion, small grains abundance is further enhanced, and after that, coagulation start to take place, and large grain is reformed, and this ratio becomes smaller. Actually, in the calculation, we also investigate some parameter dependence. So instead of assuming 50% of dense gas, what if we assume 10% or something? So we in the paper, we tried more.
How much does the result depend on the galaxy?
Yeah, we have one or two galaxies or something for the final calculations. But this diagram doesn't depend so much on the galaxy. But maybe this velocity of metal enrichment or
time scale.
Depends on the metallicity, dust galaxy mass. Okay, so what is the future? So obviously we need to predict some observational properties because we have to check with the real universe. So we are trying to predict observational properties. But to predict the observational properties, we have to some extent, we have to work on more realistic grain models. So, for example, to predict extinction curves, which can be compared with nearby galaxies or even high redshift galaxies, we should at least include graphite-like, carbonaceous species and silicate-like species. And we have to separate the predictions into at least two grain species. This is one example. So actually, Guangzhou has already started this separation. And separating, calculating carbonaceous and silicate species. And assuming that all carbonaceous component is graphite, we can, silicate is astronomical silicate, then we can predict this kind of extinction curve. This is one example. But what we can do actually is a spatial distribution of extinction curves. So we start to see the dependence of extinction curves on the place. This is very, very preliminary. So still we haven't interpreted very well. But in the central part, because maybe shattering is enhanced, I don't know, accretion is enhanced or something, there are many small grains. So the features induced by small grains are prominent. On the other hand, in the outer side, maybe stellar dust production is still dominant. The dominant species is large grains, so extinction curve is rather flat. But still, no interpretation. We have to work on this. And maybe Seiji will use, maybe we are talking about using calculation data. So this is a summary. So we have an effort of dust enrichment, implementing dust in SPH simulation. And characteristics of our model is that the simulated dust abundance and grain size distribution are simultaneously treated. But there is a limitation on the computational time, so we work on the two size type sizes. And in the future, since we have somehow grain information on grain size, we can predict some properties like extinction curve. Perhaps infrared SED also. So they are kind of ready to predict. So yeah, that's all. Yes, thank you.
So can I ask a very general question?
Yeah.
This is about the size distribution, the standards, not what you studied. If we look at diffuse regions of ISMs, out of dense clouds, why MRN-like distribution seem to be quite universal?
That's still unsolved. Even for the one-zone calculation, it's quite difficult to predict the MRNs. Like size, because if you include many processes, there could be some bump in the size distribution depending on the processes. But recently, we are also at the same time we are also finding that including in Asano et al.'s framework, we are maybe this is a Nozawa et al.'s paper last year. Nozawa-san is also coming, maybe end of this month. But they found that if we include more efficient coagulation. So the bump is mainly produced by, in the size distribution is mainly produced by the accretion effect, because accretion rapidly accretes the small grains accrete rapidly the surrounding gas phase metal. So small grain abundance has some bump. But this bump is more smoothed by coagulation. So if we include the coagulation effect caused by denser molecular clouds than we assumed, then we can reproduce the more smooth power law line.
Yeah, but MRN distribution is not to work at all at dense molecular clouds.
Dense molecular cloud is a source of large grains. Then,
I'm talking about diffuse regions. So in diffuse regions,
But those grains formed in dense medium are returned to the diffuse region because in the dissociation after the destruction of those dense clouds. By stellar radiation or like
protein. It sends this kind of feedback from those clouds, which kind of replenishes a larger part of distribution.
So assumption in this one-zone calculation is that this phase so the transition between dense phase and diffused phase is short enough so that they are well mixed at any time of the galaxy evolution.
But that in the simulation you can check.
We can check. Yeah. So this is one of the purpose of the simulation. Of course, we can't fully resolve dense medium. We have some dense region still, so we can check.
Any other question?
Okay. Thank you.